Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And welcome once again to the H&J Daily, some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Well, we covered some ground, didn't we? As we always do.
Reflecting on last night's show.
Last night's show.
Well, actually, we did do a show last night.
But I meant last night's game, which I didn't see. But you got bitter on my behalf, which is good.
I did, yeah.
We hear that. We had the book club, a fantastic golf book, an unbelievable story. Luke Moore came in and saw us, as he always does, on a Tuesday. And also, Steve Hartley was in, the voice of TalkSport.
What a voice.
Yeah, he was on good form telling us about some of his new projects. Quite exciting.
Yeah, actually, good. Yeah.
So, here it all is.
Richard Parris wrote this to The Sun this morning. I must say, I enjoyed it. What a comeback by Tiger Woods. Yeah, thanks. After a decade on the rocks, yes, with seriousness, we know all that. He's fought his way back to the top with his Masters win, like a true champ. The old saying, form will come and go, but class is permanent, sure is true in his case. Well, that's not the saying.
That's not the saying, is it?
Really. No. You're going to use it. Get the saying right.
Get
really.
The saying right. Form after will stating come the and obvious go. For four lines. It's great. But it's always the nature of a letter to a newspaper, isn't it? Sum up exactly what has happened in the last 24, 48 hours, and then have a little payoff.
Yeah.
A little payoff, which may or may not be the original quote.
I think I've gone off form now.
The star aren't publishing your letters.
At least I've had two.
Maybe you've gone a bit highbrow
I've
for them.
I've had two failures in my last
been
two
using
efforts.
Too many long words.
Yeah, and I was George R.R. Jenkins the other day, but they didn't publish that one.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was good, but I thought it would be in there this morning.
You'll come back to it, Andy.
I know.
What else you got for us?
I have got some stuff about last night's game, actually.
Yeah, no, I didn't see it, so you're going to. I only saw the brief highlights this morning. You're going to have to tell me.
You were live with Motti.
I was, yeah. I should thank the talk. Sport listeners who came and said hello, came along to the gig. There's only one John Motson. It was a kind of look back on Motti's career, and he was on great form. You know, he was telling some of the old war stories from back in the day, talking about his rivalry with Barry behind the scenes, doing his impressions of Jimmy Hill, which is always very good, and stories
Did
about
him and Barry ever have a fight?
No, they admit they weren't bosom buddies because there was that kind of professional rivalry, but they get on very well. They still see each other now and keep in touch. So
nice,
they got through all that considering. And he makes that point, something I'd not really thought of. There isn't that kind of battle for supremacy now to be the number one commentator in the same way. Because when they did Match of the Day, there were two games on. There would be two matches.
That's very true.
So you had two commentators.
Yeah.
Whereas now, you've got 8 to 10 commentators regularly doing game. Every game of Match of the Day is changed.
I bet they still... Doesn't Steve Wilson still think he's sort of number one?
Well, I don't... I mean, they've got three or four very good commentators that,
still
that do
Jonathan
the big
Pierce
games.
Is excellent.
So anyway, thanks to all the listeners who came out and watched it. But it did mean that I was reliant on the highlights this morning.
Yeah, it would have annoyed you if you'd watched the whole game. It was such a spawny win for Arsenal, obviously, honestly, really. It was an untidy performance from Arsenal. I mean, you know, Aubameyang was quick for the goal, but it was a poor effort from Foster, and obviously the foul by Deeney was ridiculous. But it's true, if Torreira is so much smaller than Deeney, if it was Xhaka, it would have hit him in the chest. It would have done, you know, so it was a little bit unlucky.
But it was still a daft thing to do.
No,
I mean, his arm...
Especially if you've said it before the game, I'm going to hit them very early.
Yeah.
The ref's going to be looking for
the arm comes out, and it was daft. He'll realise that now, won't he? Surely.
No, they will, yeah. It was a very interesting moment, actually, this will happen next year when Andre Gray was put through by Decore, and the lino had the flag up and he was offside, but he wasn't offside.
Yeah.
Now, next season, that's going to be a problem, isn't it? Because, you know, VAR, they're going to have to keep the flag down, or the players and the ref are going to have to ignore the flag completely until the players complete.
They've been told to keep the flag down. That's what that's the story.
Well, let's hope they do. But you know what? It's a muscle memory.
Of course, it is. Yeah,
an automatic thing, isn't it?
So it's going to take them a long time to adapt, and the players, and everybody else, and the fans.
It was a very strange version of to the ref to Craig Paulson of "You don't know what you're doing." It was. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're doing. You know, it was a really
They've got a different tune.
I've never heard that one before, really. Well, it was a bit like Hamilton.
I don't believe that. You're sure you got that right? You've not got the greatest ear for a melody,
no,
let's
I'm
be
telling
honest.
You. Well, we'll have to ask our Watford correspondents, Toby and David Walker.
So the Watford fans have got...
I just think they were out of tune. I think something went wrong with it.
Was there nobody at the start of the show that went... La!
Didn't they not get
that just before kickoff? That would be nice, wouldn't it? Just someone stands up.
The tuning thing, yeah.
And then Rookery goes, La!
And Unai Emery, he changed tactics about three times during the game, which is about three times more than Sarri has all season.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Giving Unai Emery a mouthful of invective is a bit of a waste of time, though, Troy, isn't it, really? He's not going to catch most of that, I wouldn't think. So I think you just give him a shrug.
He was just upset, wasn't he? But
so anyway.
But this stage of the season, 3 points is what it's all about.
Of course it is,
and that's what Arsenal
That's how they'll look at it, I'm sure, yeah. And, you know, people keep saying, oh, look at the run-in, but Tottenham have got a pretty tough run. They've got City, and they've also got West Ham, who played very well away at Old Trafford, and they'll be right up for it at Tottenham's new ground, as they always are. So that's a tough game for Spurs. So it's going to be a very difficult, tight run-in, I think, for the teams going for top four.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Hawksby and Jacobs Book Club on Talk Sport.
Yep, time for the H&J Book Club. Every Tuesday we look at a different book from a different sport and, just not so much pass judgment, but enjoy, really.
In this case,
very timely. It's a golf book this time. We didn't really know when it was decided we'd be doing this that it would be quite such a dramatic Masters with the Tiger winning it, of course. Some people would say that was the stuff of Hollywood, but this story really is. Hollywood did get hold of it ultimately, but it's completely true. It sounds stupidly far-fetched in so many different aspects, but is completely true. It's the story of the 1913 US Open. The book is called The Greatest Game Ever Played. It's written by Mark Frost, and Luke Moore has joined us in the studio to chat about it. Hi, Luke.
Good afternoon. That time of the week again. It comes around so fast.
It does. This is a good choice, this.
I think so.
I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I have. I haven't finished it yet, but it's
spoilers then.
No.
It's just an incredible story, isn't it?
It is, and... so it's the story of the 1913 US Open, the 19th version of that tournament, held at the Country Club in Brookline, Massachusetts. People will be familiar with the scene of Brookline because it was those appalling scenes at the Ryder Cup in 1999 by the US team, Justin Leonard and all that kind of stuff. That's where it was held anyway. And at this point, taking ourselves back 106 years, golf was dominated by British players. Of course, the sport was invented in Scotland, and at that point in the US, it was a minority sport, really. The great Masters tournament, which we all enjoyed last weekend, of course, wasn't founded until 1934. So at the head of the sport around this time, at the very top, was a guy called Harry Vardon. He'd already won... He's a British guy from the Channel Islands. He'd already won five Opens on these fair shores in the UK, and he was part of a triumvirate with James Braid and J.H. Taylor, who really helped to popularise the sport. They were the superstars of the day, really. I mean, Vardon himself was probably the biggest superstar in the sport since young Tom Morris, who pioneered the game in its infancy several years before. And the book starts with Vardon, or the story starts with Vardon as the undisputed king of the game. And in the book, he comes across as this old school British kind of Lord of Orley Surveys type character. A gentleman also. I mean, you know, a humble guy, but really a guy who's used to being successful.
Humble beginnings, that's what surprised me. I always thought... I knew him, I knew the name, I knew he was a great champion. You always think golf is a sort of middle-class thing. This guy was really, really poor and became, you know...
Absolutely.
Tough upbringing.
And that comes along, Andy, towards the end of the book when we see the magnanimity of the man and how he approaches his fellow, or his rival, who is, at this point, a guy called Francis Wemet. Meanwhile, while Vaarden's doing all this stuff and winning all these Opens, a seven-year-old Francis Wiemet sees Vaarden playing an exhibition match in Massachusetts and becomes instantly hooked on golf. Now, at this point in the US, the golf is really like an amateur pursuit for the wealthy, and it's seen as quite vulgar to have to make one's money from the sport. It's kind of a rich man's plaything, right? So Wiemet becomes obsessed, though, and as a poor kid from immigrant parents, he realises he probably has no chance of ever becoming a golfer. So what he does is he becomes a caddy at Brookline at a young age and works on his game in his spare time and uses borrowed clubs and cheap clubs and the rest of it. I mean, you can see where this is going, can't you? So, fast forward to 1913. Wiemet was 20 years old and Vaarden was 43. Wiemet had picked up a very notable amateur victory and was therefore convinced, kind of against his better... I don't know if you guys felt this, but kind of, it seemed like kind of against his better judgment, he was convinced to play in the US Open.
His father wasn't keen, was he? He didn't feel, as you said, it wasn't the kind of right thing he should be doing. Yeah. He was kind of almost talked into it. Somebody at the club had seen him play and said, you know, you're a contender.
Wiemet's father never really helped it, never really endorsed him, helped him, encouraged him to play golf. Thought of it as a bit of a waste of time. Wiemet, for his part, was only ever an amateur, I mean, throughout his life. He is now seen really in retrospect because of what transpires as the father of amateur golf in the US. But he spent most of his time working in a sports shop and he refused to turn pro his whole life. There came a bit later on, just to skip ahead quickly before we get into the book itself, it came a point later on where he became so famous that the US Golfers Association decided that he was actually taking money from golf, despite on paper as an amateur, and they withdrew his amateur status and said this is not acceptable. And he sort of got a little bit annoyed about that, and eventually it all got sorted out and he was made an amateur again. But it's important to stress that he never wanted to become a professional golfer. Anyway, in 1913, the US Open is moved to September from June to accommodate Harry Vaarden and Ted Ray, these two great superstars of the game. But the reason for that is because at that point they had to travel by ship, they had other exhibition matches to play, they were very much in demand, and really the competition and the tournament was a far better prospect with those two in it, and people were very interested and excited for the four or five times UK Open champion, the Open Championships champion, Harry Vaarden, to come over. Wiemet is asked by the head of the USGA, as we just touched on, to participate as an amateur, but he says he's had too much time off work already and he doesn't want to do it. He eventually does it, hasn't got a caddy, so he gets a 10-year-old Eddie Lowry, who, by the way, I don't know if you guys know this, went on to become Bob Hope's best friend and a multi-millionaire car dealer.
Yeah, he was mates with Bing Crosby and used to sell a lot of pro-ams.
He played
a bit as well. I mean, he was a kind of, he played golf.
He was around from a young age, obviously. Yeah. And the book really is about this old versus new, US versus UK, amateur versus professional rivalry. 100% true, non-fiction book about a fantastic story. And throughout the story, Eddie Lowry, this 10-year-old caddy, is kind of the comic relief, really, isn't he? He sort of buzzes around Wiemet with all these predictions about how low he's going to shoot today and how great he's going to do. He reminds me a bit of Short Round in Indiana Jones. And he just basically essentially behaves as a 10-year-old boy, because he is a 10-year-old boy.
Yeah.
And then what happens and what transpires throughout the week of the tournament essentially set a lot of the stall out for what continued with golf for the rest of the century, I suppose.
I mean, if you pitch it so far to Hollywood, you've just told that story. So there's the guy, the two parallel stories of the men, you know, both had sort of dad issues. You tell their story, and then you bring it together, then you add in a 10-year-old caddy. And at that point, someone, an executive from the studio would say, he can't be 10 years old. That's ridiculous.
No one will buy into that.
That's too much. I'd like a kid in the film, but that's too much.
Wiemet felt he wasn't strong enough to lift the bag, didn't he?
Yeah, he was worried about him.
The bag was bigger than the boy, wasn't it? Really?
If you look at the photos, there are photos in the book towards the end, and you can obviously see them online. I mean, it's just ridiculous. The photos of them standing around with the trophy or whatever. Eddie Lowry just looks like a tiny child, which of course he was. And I think back in those days, a lot of the caddies were children, because when you hit 16, the rules were then that if you wanted to become a professional caddy attached to a golf club, you could do that. Otherwise, you weren't allowed to caddy at all. Mm. So they loopholed it in a way by having these kids doing it. And Eddie does it with Francis to successful effect, but quite comedy effect.
Really. Yeah. Now, we'll talk a bit more about what goes on in the competition shortly, but I don't think we're going to blow too much of the rest of the story by playing you a bit of the trailer from the film, because this story was made into a film, and we'll look at the links between film and TV and the guy that wrote the book, Mark Frost, as well, after the travel. But let's hear a little bit of the trailer, and it's the proper old school. It's a Disney movie. Shia LaBeouf was in it. Stephen Delane, fine British actor.
Directed by the late, great Bill Paxton, by the way.
Yeah, Bill Paxton, that's right. Yeah. So it's proper in a world. Listen to this.
He was born with nothing except a dream.
There must be a way for somebody who's not a member to compete.
You're a caddy. Golf is a game for gentlemen. It's not for your kind.
He was given no opportunities except the ones he made.
Those men don't have to earn a place in this world. It's given to them. We're not those kind of people.
But sometimes it takes an outsider.
You shot a 71 on the toughest golf course in New England.
To change the rules.
There we are. That's a little bit of a flavour of the way Hollywood...
He came in every Tuesday to do book club. Yeah.
His name was In a World Where One Man Can Read a Book. He changed their lives forever.
In a world where one man has the time to read so many books.
Yeah. Anyway...
I haven't actually seen the film, by the way, so I don't know if it's any good.
It's... I mean,
I'm just pleased of a book that hasn't got about four updated versions of the last read.
It looks a bit hokey. But, because... You couldn't make this up. It wasn't a difficult sell because what happens ultimately is just ludicrous. So we'll be talking about that. The kid, by the way, if you're wondering, the young women doesn't get absolutely cuffed and go around in 120. But anyway, we'll tell you more about that. We're discussing.
It wouldn't make much of a film.
Well, he would be rubbish. A 20-year-old kid lives over the road from the course. It's absolute garbage. Course Varden won. Anyway, The Greatest Game Ever Played is the book by Mark Frost, and we'll chat more with Luke very shortly.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hawksby and Jacobs Book Club on Talk Sport.
Yes, Book Club, we are discussing Mark Frost, The Greatest Game Ever Played, Varden, We Met, and The Birth of Modern Golf. And we've given you all the background in the first section, but we're just about to play the 1913 US Open, and really the odds are stacked against the young We Met, 20-year-old local lad, against the giants of the game, Varden and Ray.
Difference in equipment as well. Varden had superior equipment, didn't he?
Oh, for sure, yeah. And I think we learned what we learned before the break about We Met, who's a humble guy, an amateur, a 20-year-old kid, really. Not expected to do an awful lot, having to be persuaded to enter this competition. And really, his kind of swagger and his arrogance that perhaps you need to win big sporting events comes in the form of his 10-year-old boy of a caddy, Eddie Lowry, as we mentioned. And there's a little quote I just wanted to pull before we get into the tournament itself, where Francis Weimer is standing around and waiting to walk on to do his practice before he starts the first round. And Ted Ray and Harry Varden walk into the scene, if you like. And Eddie says to Francis, "Who do they think they are? The Kings of England?" And Francis says, "Well, that kind of is who they are, Eddie, more or less." And Eddie, 10 years old, don't forget, says, "Oh, this is America, though."
Now,
and he's got the confidence.
This touches on a stylistic thing that I think we, Andy and I both picked up on. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but he imagines conversations. Of course, Mark Frost wasn't there. He wasn't around at the time. And there are whole pages of books of imagined conversations between the
I was suddenly reading the dialogue. And I said, well, this is a good dialogue. I'm thinking, how does he know this?
I think that's a fair point. There's a certain amount of artistic license. A lot of writers who do historical non-fiction, I'm thinking of the Eric Larsons of this world, who wrote In the Garden of Beasts and Dead Wake and all the rest of it, he does the same thing. I believe Ben McIntyre, who wrote Agent Zigzag and a couple of those other bits around the Second World War, he sort of adopts that as well. I think it's part of the literary, it's part of the literary sort of trick, isn't it, to get you buying into it? Because Mark Frost's background, really, for those who don't know, he co-created Twin Peaks with David Lynch. He wrote a load of Hill Street Blues, and he was a TV film, as you mentioned earlier, like a scriptwriter. So his interest in this story is probably from the dramatic side of it.
Yeah.
So he's gonna implant all these kind of conversations into what goes on, which of course brings it to life.
And I think he wrote the script for the film as well when it came about.
He definitely served as producer.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you feel about it. For me, I don't think it necessarily matters too much, but I can understand why
they must have had conversations, and he can sort of. That's why he's done it, because you can imagine the sort of thing that was said, but you can't take it as verbatim.
No,
yeah.
But we're never going to know anyway.
It's the sort of thing that David Peace was getting a bit of a kicking for in the Damn United and other books as well. Yeah. So, you know, people say, well, he's imagining things, so it's fiction. But
it doesn't make it any less entertaining.
A couple of points on the film. Tim and Moreno both say they've seen the film. Tim says it's actually really good, definitely worth a watch, not as Hollywood cheese as you'd think. And Moreno says it's very good. The great thing is that Varden and Ray are not made the villains. If anything, they're heroes just like we, Matt. And that comes across, though, in fact, in the book. They don't come across badly, do they?
The one thing I will say about the film is it slightly changes the manner, not the ending itself, but the manner of the ending to make it more dramatic.
Yeah.
Which we'll come on to in terms of what actually went on. But yeah, of course, I mean, you know, that's that would be a temptation, wouldn't it, for a Hollywood movie to stick a love story in there or to
Well, there is a bit of one in the film, actually.
But it's not too severe.
No, I don't think so.
But what it's not done is it's not sort of taken the temptation of bugging them together and sort of butting heads and being and hating each other and having a fist fight in the locker room and all that kind of stuff, which could go on in a Hollywood film.
Yeah.
But anyway, so they set up for the first round. Now, interestingly, a lot of these tournaments around this time were match play. So a lot of the stuff that Francis Ouimet was used to playing when he won the US Amateur and the other tournaments he won was mostly match play. This is obviously stroke play. But as far as I understand it, it was far more common for match play to happen in that environment and that country at that part of the world at the time. So already he's up against it with a different format. The four rounds were also played over 2 days. Of course, the fields were smaller. And golf was nascent then, particularly in the US. So they played the first round on Thursday morning, the second round on Thursday afternoon, the third round Friday morning, the fourth round Friday afternoon. After the first round, Harry Vardon's right up there. And so is the great Walter Hagen, by the way, who's involved.
Yeah.
Plays a little cameo here and there. But Ouimet's nowhere to be seen. And then after the second round, at the end of the first day, Ouimet is tied for seventh with Walter Hagen on +5. Harry Vardon is tied for the lead at +1, so four shots ahead. Ouimet sort of struggles here and there with the occasion, with the weather, with lots of bits and pieces. But really, it's his caddy that has the belief in him and pushes him through, which sounds crazy given that he was 10 years old. And then really for the third round Friday morning, Ouimet sort of steps up and really pulls those four or five shots back. And the third round ends with Ouimet, Ted Ray and Harry Vardon, the three big protagonists in the film, being tied for first place. Now, when they get to the fourth round, strangely enough, and although we saw a pretty truncated leaderboard at the Masters last week, at one point there were 12 players within two shots of each other.
Yeah.
At the end of the final round in this tournament, the 1913 US Open, Ouimet, the amateur, Ted Ray and Harry Vardon are all joint leaders on +12. Proper scores back then. Proper scores. Don't talk to me about the equipment or the yardage.
Yeah.
+12, right? Which means Walter Hagen sadly finished tied for fourth, three shots behind, but he went on to have a fine career. I think we can all agree.
Yeah, yeah.
So that meant there was an 18-hole playoff. An 18-hole playoff between the three of them. The three the two who come over from the UK, who they hold the tournament off for 2 months for because they're such big names, and the plucky 20-year-old amateur golfer from Brookline in Massachusetts with the 10-year-old caddy go into an 18-hole playoff.
The following day.
The following day.
Yeah. Mm.
By this point, it's such a big story that We Met is still there and has got a good chance of winning that the UK newspapers, the US newspapers have taken this story and run with it. And you mentioned in the break there, Paul, exactly how many people were involved watching for the second, for the final day's playoff. It was something ridiculous, wasn't it?
No, yeah, I think everybody comes. I can't remember what the actual figure was, but the place is so crowded. Brookline, they can barely cope with the amount of people that turn up to watch the playoff.
And to make this story even more interesting, Francis Wiemek grew up and currently lives at this point on a house just opposite the 17th green.
Mm.
So the way he's become a golfer has been living so close to the golf course and being so obsessed with golf, he's stealing over there when he can to play holes, and now he's playing the biggest game of his life against the two best players in the world for the US Open Championship. Now, do I, at this point, you haven't finished it, but do I spoil the ending or what?
Do you know what? I think it's a difficult one, isn't it? Should we? I mean,
you can kind of guess what happens.
Yeah.
Let's face it, if Varden had hammered him, it wouldn't be much of a story, would it?
Exactly.
Okay.
Shall we? What do you think?
We're giving people sort of due notice here.
Well,
if you don't want to
look away now.
Look away now.
Think of it like the scores at the end of the news.
If you want to finish this book, put the light program on for a second, then come back to us in a couple of minutes.
It doesn't diminish your enjoyment of the book to know that Francis Wiemek delivers the round of his life on the final day, wins in the playoff by 5 shots. He posts a 72, which is a 1-under, goes out in 38, comes back in 34, 1-under par, finishes 5 shots ahead of Harry Vardon and 6 shots ahead of Ted Ray. He receives a princely sum of $0 for winning that because of his amateur status, which he refuses to relinquish. Harry Vardon gets $300, sorry, which is about $5,000 to $6,000 in today's money. And Ted Ray gets $150 for his part in it as well. The legacy of this achievement from Francis Wiemek means that golf in the US explodes in popularity to the point of where it is now clearly the dominant marketplace for the sport.
Well, I think it was 2 years. There was about 350,000 people playing golf in the US in 1913, which is staggering if you think of the size of the US. And within 2 years, there were 2 million people playing. So that was the difference he made in a pretty short space of time.
It captured the hearts of the nation. Clearly, because it showed that an American could compete, a US amateur could compete with these great champions of Britain who were the dominant force in golf at the time, and really set the stall out and set the tone for much of what came next. I mean, now we see golfers. I mean, it's crazy now. You go on to any random event. I remember I went to go and see the Travelers Championship in Connecticut a couple of years ago. Guy who came about fifth, never heard of him, looked him up on PGAtour.com or whatever. He had about $3 million that season. Mm. You do not need to be a world-famous, consistently winning golfer to earn millions of dollars in the sport. And I'm not begrudging them that. And obviously Tiger Woods has played a big part in that as well for lots of different reasons. But a lot of it can be stemmed and traced back to what happened at the end of September in 1913 at Brookline at the Country Club when Francis Wiemek won the 1913 US Open.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story and it's completely true. And there's, you know, we haven't told the complete story. There's an awful lot more to it than that. You get over that stylistic thing. If it doesn't bother you that effectively he's making up what people say.
And the background is as almost important as the match.
And it's all true, which makes it's probably one of the most incredible stories in sport.
I'd say so. And it's separated in two parts. The first part is the background of both the players, the protagonist, and the second part of the book is the tournament itself. It's published by Sphere Publishing. It's available now from all good bookshops. It's part-time Warner, of course. It was published in 2002. Good thing is, you haven't got to worry about different imprints or 10th anniversary
editions. The story's not going to move on.
It's not going to change. The story's not going to change. So go and get it now while you can. It's called The Greatest Game Ever Played and it's by Mark Frost.
Next week, if you haven't read this, there's a pretty good chance you may have read the book because it had a huge impact at the time and continues. Even clubs like Liverpool continue to buy into the whole philosophy of it. It's Moneyball about Billy Beane. In the world
the
of
Oakland
baseball.
Days.
That's right. It's a fascinating book.
I'm not sure what Moneyball is about spending $70 million on a goalkeeper, but
well, there's elements of it. I mean, you need a balance. I think it's fair to say you can't.
When you leave the studio, say to the producer, show me the money.
Yeah, I will.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Although I do like this one, the Reader's Offer Trousers. I do love a Reader's Offer Trousers.
Yeah, now this is what newspaper did this feature in?
Well, I think this is in The Sun, actually. So, it's obviously going to be quality.
So this is a specialist trouser you're considering buying.
Yes, it's the Farrah.
They use that in the world of menswear. It's only singular, isn't it? If you get often a little clothes shop near me when I was a kid in Edmonton Green, and the guy would say, What trousers? What size are you? A trouser. Have you only ever trouser, used in no, your even in your even old here, line so of work, Andy?
Premium comfort stretch trousers. Yeah. But then it says Farrow have taken their most popular formal trouser.
It's a former. Yeah, it's a trouser. Yeah,
and made it even better. Yeah. And which is no one can complain about.
Well, this is a
Farrow
slack, Andy. This is a quality trouser.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Tailored in the usual high grade polyester.
Yeah, it's like the old boys' old English vinyl briefcases.
It's
isn't
only
it? Yeah.
Low grade polyester. Let's be serious. This is the bit I like. It's a feature. It's got two side pockets and one back pocket.
That's nice, yeah.
And what trousers haven't got pockets in them?
Yeah.
Surely every pair of trousers pockets. Ever invented.
Yeah. Machine washable.
Well, that's a good thing.
Nice.
Anyway, I've ordered a couple of pairs.
Available
to wearing
in biscuit, taupe and grey.
Why not?
Yeah.
And you see Anne Hegarty from The Chase and also I'm a Celebrity.
Yeah, what's happened to her?
She's quite amusing, actually. She's basically had to deny that she was a Newcastle football fan. There was a fan photographed. I think he was seen probably in the Leicester game early before the game.
Yeah.
Because it looks like as if it was daylight. And he's not, like a lot of Newcastle fans.
She went to the match, did she?
No, she didn't go to the match. There's a lot of Newcastle fans take their tops off.
Yeah.
And here's a bloke with, you know, moobs, basically.
Okay.
And basically people have said, oh, I've seen you at the football.
Oh, that's a bit unkind, isn't it?
No, but she was quite funny about it. She said, I'd like to confirm this isn't me.
Okay.
My boobs say are bigger than that, she says, and but honestly,
well,
I mean,
well,
she was very, very amusing. But the reaction, one follower applauding her for making light of the situation said, I can't stop roaring with laughter, your sense of humor is simply the best.
Yeah,
and I thought, well, it's made me smile. I'm not gonna say I'm roaring with laughter. Very few things in life make you roar with laughter.
I did inwardly, I kept it in, I didn't want to embarrass myself on air.
And here's another letter written to the papers about Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Huge congrats for Tiger Woods for winning the Masters. To come back after everything he's been through and take one of the biggest prizes in sport was remarkable. Has there ever been a better comeback, says Leslie. What's the point? Stop. Everybody said that. For goodness sake. Honestly, when do you sit down
and
think...
I'd not thought of that. Has there?
For goodness
seriously.
Sake.
But no one's really talked about this. It was a great comeback. But has there ever been a better one than that?
I don't think there has, really.
Can you... Is it fair to look at other people's comebacks and let's not do that, eh?
No. I was grateful to The Sun this morning because I'm not a fan of Game of Thrones. Not only am I not a fan, I've never even watched it.
Well, you're not a fan, you've never watched
I've
it.
I've never
you
seen it, I
fan.
Might love it.
You may be a fan if you watch it. I think you'd like the nudity, Andy. I think beyond that, the fantasy aspect of it may not be your cup of tea.
Well, to me, it sounds like Neighbours, but in a sort of fantastical version of Neighbours, because it says here in The Sun today, five biggest questions raised by episode one.
Yeah.
Is Cersei really pregnant? Well, that's something that could definitely happen in Neighbours. So we've got the same plot line now. Is Ellie pregnant or not? So this is the same.
It's brilliant.
Will Jon and Daenerys split? Well, that's again, a Neighbours plot line. Who does Arya want to kill? Well, that's happened in Neighbours in the last year.
Yeah.
Will Jamie be good or die? Well, I don't know. Possibly you could say the same thing about Carl Kennedy. Who will end on Iron Throne? They haven't got that in Neighbours.
They haven't got an Iron Throne.
They haven't got the Iron Throne.
There's not one in Lasseter's, is
it? It does sound quite soapy, though, the whole particular thing.
Yeah, I think it is. That's, if you strip everything down to sort of plot lines like that, it'll sound a bit soapy, won't it?
That's true, really. And Vladimir Putin. I don't know who Boris Putin.
Boris Vladimir Putin. What are you singing, are you?
To give him his full name. Well, yes, I'm doing everything as a musical now. I'm going to sing the whole show.
After your love of Hamilton.
Exactly. I did decide, actually, have you noticed that how many sports shows are using the background? Calvin Horace. Honestly, I can't
just
even
calm
speak.
Down, Calvin Horace.
Yeah. He's very good, isn't he? He's not quite as good as Calvin Harris.
No.
And he's track giant.
He's Britain's foremost Calvin Harris tribute act, isn't he? Yeah.
Calvin Harris is giant, with... I'm nearly calling
Here
Tin
we go.
Man. Here we go. Dustbin Man. Rag and Bone Man.
You've been listening to Mike Parry too often, haven't you?
I have. Rag and Bone Man. I love the track. It's a great track. But honestly, you do every sports show, every TV trail. Have you heard how many people are using it? I did think of doing the whole of this section with Calvin Harris Horace in the background.
Can we find some Calvin Harris Horace?
But you've got to have that particular bit, I am a giant, but not the bit with him singing. It's they're using the sort of musical version. Asking a lot from Becky there, really.
Well, she maybe for the next bit.
Instantaneously.
Maybe for a couple of seconds,
unlikely. There you go. Where did I get to? I was about to say something else. Oh, yes. Boris Putin. Vladimir Putin.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Yes, yep. Has claimed that last year he earned £102,000. That was his earnings.
That sounds about right, isn't it?
I don't know how he's going to manage on that, really, with all those, you know, summer palaces he's got.
We understand he's got a bit stashed away.
He probably has. Do you know about Drake's sporting curse?
Yeah, I talked to you about it last week. That's why we do Don't Ask Me. I actually mentioned it on air with Todd.
I've heard of this before.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Every day's a new day with you, Andy, isn't it? You can get things and you discover the same things every day like a goldfish.
Tremendous.
Yeah.
And, yes, well, he was at PSG's 4-1, 5-1 defeat, was it? Whoever they were playing on.
5-1 they lost. Yeah. He went to that one as well.
He was there. So people are laughing and saying, oh, there he is, he's... bock them as well.
He did for the Goons, didn't he, last week? Yeah. I know. He's incredible, isn't it? So, stone stacking. The European Championships are coming up. It's a sport I know very... Well, sport. It's a sport I know very little about.
Yeah.
So, we'll be discussing that very shortly. But before we do that, of course, we have got a kind of a related clip, you may recall. Tony Cascarino features in this one. This will take you back. Have a listen to this.
They were allowed a beer, but there'd be one each on the plane. Because they used to laugh, so... We've got beer, you know. Dennis would say, "Well, we've got one beer on the plate,"
sure.
And they'll be left. But he left no one stone.
Stone.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Hawksby and Jacobs here on TalkSport. Now, it may be a cameo role, but really, I'd say this next man is as much a part of TalkSport from day one as anybody else, really.
I agree.
He's been the voice...
I'd say more important than Alan.
Yeah, yeah. 08717. The voice of TalkSport, Steve Hartley. Good to see you, Steve. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, fellas. Lovely to be here.
That's Steve Hartley.
Yes, that guy.
Yeah. We've had a little bit of love coming in on Twitter for your work. Where's this one? One of the listeners got in touch, taking us back to your work on TV. Steve's coming in. He said, just say how much I enjoyed his work as Superintendent Chandler on The Bill.
Oh, yeah. No, we all loved that.
You went out in a blaze of glory in The Bill, didn't you? It was quite a storyline you had. Didn't I just?
They'd been rerunning it on Drama Channel, so I keep. I mean, for me, it's 20 years ago since I did that. So
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's a long time. But I kind of go into Sainsbury's and people are going, oh, I saw you last night. And I'm thinking, what on?
No, you haven't really aged over the time that we've known you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're wearing well, Steve.
The Tom Chandler, I mean, it's very strange because actually I only did 2 years on The Bill.
Hmm.
But people think I did a lot longer because, of course, it gets repeated on all these, you know, various channels. I mean, I spent longer playing Bill Sykes in the West End than I ever did playing Tom Chandler.
Yeah.
But so it's quite a weird one, really.
I know you listen now again. Have you heard yesterday that Andy walked out halfway through Hamilton? It wasn't for him. He decided to miss the... it's the hottest ticket.
I haven't seen it. Did you not like it, Andy? Not your cup of tea.
Not for me, I'm afraid. They were very good. I mean, let's be honest. They were fantastic. The audience loved them. This is a personal thing with me.
Yeah.
I just don't like musicals. They don't chime with me.
Yeah.
I just keep thinking, stop singing. Can speak. Just speak like a normal person.
Look, my dad was the same. I used to love watching Elvis movies and Cliff Richard movies when I was a kid, and my dad would go, why is he broken out singing in the middle of that?
Yeah, but then Hamilton, they don't break out into song. It's an operetta, really.
Yes, and Les Miserables is a bit the same, actually.
Yeah, that's another one I couldn't deal with.
But I like Les Miserables. It's one of that and Oliver, my two favourite musicals.
Have you been in Les Miserables at all?
I haven't. To be honest with you, I did get... asked by Cameron McIntosh about doing the part of Javert when I'd finished doing Bill Sykes for him. It was too big a sing for me.
Right.
I couldn't sing it. And oddly enough, Michael Ball's going back in and doing Javert at a kind of anniversary. I think it must be the 40th anniversary of Miserables.
Not Ricky Javert.
It's such a distinctive... speaking voice. So I just wonder, as a singer, are you a good singer? Is that something you tend to
hold? It sounds like Jimmy Somerville. Did you not know that?
Yes, really, really high voice.
Exactly.
Mark Lester, I am not.
That would be fantastic.
Yes, I can hold a tune, but it doesn't go, it never ever goes too high, really.
Yeah.
It just starts to sound somewhere else.
You're right on Scott Walker numbers.
It makes Bonnie Tyler sound smooth.
Do you do a high voice? Can you do a high voice?
I don't know if I can.
No,
it gets nasal.
Yeah,
it does. It gets all nasal.
Now, you're doing a kind of interesting projects. We'll come on to the TV project at the moment, but you're involved in a game, a virtual reality PlayStation project.
I am, which is coming out on May the 28th. Yeah. It's called Blood and Truth, which has been developed by Sony London, and it's a VR. I mean, it's PSVR, and it's you know, it's going to be a huge game, a huge action game, and it's completely immersive, and you're in your own action movie, really.
Wow!
And it's quite.
And you did all the motion capture stuff for this, did you?
All the motion capture, performance capture stuff.
Yeah.
Which it's like the third time I've done it, and it's a whole new ballgame.
So people don't know you've kind of got this. Is it still the same system? The kind of little dots on your body.
Yeah. So you're wearing a Lycra suit.
Yeah.
And you have little dots on your face and your body.
Yeah.
And you have a camera on your head. And then you have a lot of cameras around you on a green screen in a studio all the time.
Mm.
And it's almost a perfect hybrid between theatre and filming, really, because it demands the physicality of theatre, but you still have to maintain the focus because you're in close-up all the time that one would have when you're doing a film. I mean, the only thing about it is there's no help. You're in a fairly sterile environment enacting whatever it is that you're enacting. So it's like being a child again in your bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, I watch my daughter Tess in her bedroom playing with dragons or whatever, and she's totally immersed in it. And it's a bit like doing
so you're
that,
acting
really.
To nothing, really.
To nothing.
You've got nothing to work to.
And so it's totally within your imagination.
Wow.
You're told what environment you're in.
Yeah.
But there's nothing around you.
But you're in just some hangar somewhere, but you're told you're in a dungeon or you're
absolutely.
In a water or in a cot. Yeah,
and
yeah.
There's five dragons landing or flying.
So what will we see when we get the game? Will we see you or a representation of you?
You see me, but it's an enhanced version of me.
Wow.
It's a kind of avatar version of me.
Do you like what they've come up with?
It's interesting. I mean, it kind of looks a bit like a cross between Ray Liotta and a lizard and me. It's kind of, it's not the most flattering image, but I mean, I play a gangster in it who is essentially thinks he's a legitimate businessman and likes to be seen as such, but he's not. And he's called Anthony Sharp. And he's the main protagonist in it, which you, as the player, are kind of going up against. But, I mean, there is some amazing set pieces in it. And I put on the glasses and actually went into the game, and it's a very odd thing, standing opposite yourself you walk into a room and interacting with yourself. It's a strange thing.
And who else is in the cast of
it's
this?
It's got a great cast that they put together. And one of the things that Sony London Studio wanted was a people who had theatrical experience.
Yeah.
So they've got Colin Salmon, who was in the Bond movies and in the film Mortal Engines. And they've got Natasha Little, who recently was in The Night Manager. You know, they put together a really, really good cast.
And you've got another one coming up, Squadron 42.
Squadron 42.
This one's also got a great cast.
An unbelievable cast of people. I mean, I've got to say, that was the first one I ever did.
And this is another game. Yeah.
Another game that's coming out probably sometime this year. And, you know, it's quite remarkable. I did it, and you walk on set, and all of a sudden, there's kind of Gary Oldman and Gillian Anderson and people like Mark Strong in it. And
wow,
okay, hang on, we're in something here.
Yeah.
But I mean, the whole gaming thing, the whole gaming situation now, I think it's something like $137 billion
a year
that it creates.
Yeah.
So it's more than music and film and TV put together.
Oh, no, it's massively popular.
And the games that they're producing now are not just, I mean, I never got beyond Space Invaders, really. I that was about my limit.
Mm.
The games they're producing now are, they take you into so many completely different areas.
Yeah.
And also the gamers are aware that they've got a responsibility, that it's not just entertainment, that it's educational as well, and that it has such an influence on so many young people.
Yeah.
The TV companies are kind of aware of it as well.
And
a lot of the TV companies are developing TV series around the games that are being developed as well.
We're going to see you on Sky as well, aren't we? So in the old traditional, in the old money.
Yeah, so I'll be on the old TV.
That's right.
I'm doing a series called Brassic, which is written by Danny Brocklehurst, who wrote The Street and Clocking Off. I mean, he's a fantastic writer. And he's co-written that actually with the actor that's playing the lead, Joe Gielgan.
Yeah.
And it's got Michelle Keegan, and it's about a group of young people up north and their battle for survival, really. It's not dissimilar to Shameless in many ways.
Our old mate Tim Keys.
Oh, is he?
Fantastic. Yeah, good.
So, excellent. Steve, where are you from originally? Because we always have this thing, because often you're asked to do a northern accent.
For the trails.
I'm a Yorkshireman originally. Oh, really? Yes. Okay. But I've been down here for 30-something, you know, 35 years now. So, and also, my mum, which is why I'm a Tottenham supporter, my mum came from Tottenham.
Right.
So I had family from Tottenham. So although my dad was very northern, my mum was actually quite London, I suppose, in a way. So I've got a bit of a neutral accent.
Amazing. Now. This association then with Talk Sport, I mean, it's been kind of good 20 years. You've very much become the go-to guy, the recognisable voice of all the trails.
Yes. I mean, I love coming in and doing them, actually. Mm. And, you know, myself and, you know, the creative team, Peter and Liz and John and Matt. I mean, we have a really good time doing them. And I mean, we seriously have come up with some funny stuff, and they come up with some very funny stuff. And I mean, it just kind of carried on. I think what happened is because when I first started doing the voices, I was also in the bill at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think people started to go, wait, that's the same guy that's doing this.
Mm.
And so the voice on TalkSport started to develop its own persona in a way, which it has, because a lot of the trails that, you know, that I do for you guys or for Alan, they become quite personal. Some of the stuff that we throw out. So, in fact, my kind of TalkSport trails have become almost like a personality in their own right.
Playing a part.
Which I do get a lot of. You know, every time I get in the back of a cab, I can guarantee you, after 2 minutes, the driver will go, "You're the guy I've talked to."
Of course, such a recognised.
That's what they remember you for, isn't it?
Yeah, they do. They go, "You're the guy I've talked to." And I go, "Yes, I'm the guy I've talked to."
He's won a few awards, hasn't he, Peter and his team?
They did a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Some of the very innovative trails that they did, and, you know, very funny and witty trails as well.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
So there we are. That was this afternoon show. You're going to try and cultivate a voice like that, are you?
Well, you do. I know, Steve. You won't mind me saying. He's a pretty heavy smoker.
Oh, is he really?
Oh, yeah. So you have to smoke about 40 a day to get a voice like that.
Blimey, okay.
Not healthy, of course.
Well, he may have given them up. I mean, well,
he might have done.
He might have done. Then
he might sound like this if he starts giving them up.
Yeah, he could do. Yeah, he did struggle with a high voice though, so I doubt it.
I doubt it.
Anyway, that's us. We'll catch up with you tomorrow. Have a fine evening. Thanks for downloading us.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.